Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. A look at the extended forecast over the next couple of weeks indicates that temperatures will remain unseasonably mild and still without expectation of a hard-killing frost. The lowest temperature forecast still is well above freezing at 34 degrees. Since that's the case, it's not too late to plant bulbs or perennials with next year's garden in mind. The ground will remain sufficiently warm for some time yet, which will encourage the root growth that plants need to have a good start for next spring. Remember to choose from the wide variety of native plants whose fruits directly support birds, as well as serving as host plants for insects, which in turn also feed the birds and other animals. But our extended period of pleasant weather soon will come to an end. Temperatures throughout Ohio inevitably will drop, and already home-invading insects are beginning to seek winter quarters. These uninvited guests typically include the multicolored Asian lady beetles, box elder bugs, western conifer seed bugs, magnolia seed bugs, and the most notorious of all, the brown marmorated stink bugs, which certainly do live up to their name. As a matter of fact, as I reached into my clothes closet just this morning, I found a stink bug perched on the shoulder of a sweater. How it found its way into a dark space behind closed doors, well, I'll tell you this, that's one bug that needn't worry about surviving through the winter in our house. We, including yours truly, often refer to insects in general as bugs. But, and as I've likely said this before, while all bugs are insects, not all insects are bugs. All the invaders I just listed, except the ladybug, which scientifically is a beetle, are classified as true bugs in the order Hemiptera. Hemi means half, and the suffix ptera means wing, indicating the front half of the front wings of Hemipterans is hardened, while the back half is membranous. Western conifer seed bugs belong to the aptly named leaf-footed family of bugs. They are native to western North America, but have been spreading slowly eastward since the 1950s. While they do feed on conifers that grow here in Ohio, including various pines, spruces, hemlocks, and Douglas fir, their feeding does not impact the health of trees. However, they too can be annoying fall home invaders. The similar aforementioned magnolia leaf-footed bug may appear on their namesake host, but also comes indoors. Leaf-footed bugs get their name from the leaf-like expansions of the tibia on their two hind legs. Box elder bugs may congregate by the hundreds on tree trunks during cold snaps in early fall, collecting mostly on the west side of the trunks in order to maximize exposure to the sun and its warmth. These bugs have one generation in colder climates, two in warmer climates. Regardless, they end the season as a mix of adults and immature nymphs. However, only the adults can make it through the winter, which presents a problem for late hatching nymphs. If a cold snap is followed by a warm spell, the adult bugs can fly in search of suitable overwintering sites inside homes or other structures, leaving the wingless nymphs behind to suffer their freezing fate. However, late instar nymphs may have a chance to make it to adulthood and thus survive the winter by turning cannibal, attacking and eating younger nymphs, thus giving the bigger ones the energy necessary to fully develop and survive the winter. It's a true post-Halloween horror story, but pretty par for the course for the insect world. Over the last week or so, with the wind and still not enough rain, the autumn tree color show mostly has closed up shop for another year. I was surprised at the intensity of the colors that we did see on so many trees after having such extended periods of heat and drought this summer. There are, however, several non-native tree species that really only now are displaying their intense fall colors, later than most of our natives. The invasive Callery pear tree is one such, their leaves turning an admittedly spectacular color wheel of shades from yellow-gold through orange, and red to maroon to the delight of kids and crafters who collect and press the leaves to preserve them. Another is the ginkgo, also known as the maidenhair tree, also not a native and so, like the calorie pear, of no use as a host tree to any of our native insects. However, unlike the calorie pear, it does not spread its offspring invasively into roadsides, meadows, and woodland edges, since no animals eat the fruits that may or may not appear on ginkgo trees, something I will address further in just a moment. The ginkgo's native range includes China and Japan. Dating back 200 million years, it is the only tree species still extant that shared the landscape with dinosaurs. Individual ginkgos have long lifespans. They can live for up to 1,000 years. There are even four ginkgo trees still standing that survived the bombing of Hiroshima. Their longevity makes them an excellent tool for scientists to study weather patterns and climate change. Our daughter and son-in-law were in Virginia last weekend and visited the ginkgo grove at the Blandy Experimental Farm, a state arboretum in Boyce, Virginia, about 70 miles west of Washington, D.C. With over 300 trees, Blandy's is one of the largest public ginkgo groves in America. Late October to early November usually is when the trees are at their most spectacular, so the grove is very busy with visitors then, especially on weekends. But one needn't travel 400 miles to view the golden-leaved ginkgos. Here in the city of Marion, one may see mature ginkgo trees, and whose leaves this past week have paved the lawns and streets with a golden mat. In a so-called normal autumn, once the leaves turn, a night of hard frost will bring most all the leaves fluttering down within the space of a day. Quite a thing to see. I've seen ginkgos in at least one other neighborhood in Marion, but that was years ago and I don't remember where it is. But there are some individual large and small ginkgos scattered here and there in yards around the city and the county, and a row of young ones planted along North Main Street near St. Mary's Church. The high pollution tolerance of ginkgo trees makes the species an ideal choice for the urban environment. And there are two mature trees growing in an older portion of Marion Cemetery. A male ginkgo grows at the extreme northeast corner near the fence separating the cemetery from the woodland behind Harrison Elementary. And a tall female tree grows in the far southwest corner, a bit back off the intersection of Vernon Heights and Delaware Avenue. Ginkgo trees are dioecious, Latin word for two houses. That is, any given tree produces either male or female flowers, not both. So, in order for a female tree to bear fruit, there must be a male within bee distance or near enough for the wind to waft the male pollen to the female flowers. Examples of other dioecious plants you may know include aspen, date, kiwi, persimmon, pistachios, red cedar, white ash, willow, and many junipers. The female trees may not flower and fruit for the first 20 years of growth, and therefore falsely appear to be male trees. For these reasons, male clones are grafted onto seedling, understock, in the nursery industry, for sale as landscape trees. While eliminating female trees avoids the messy, smelly fruit, the copious clouds of springtime pollen from the male trees is the bane of hay fever sufferers. There are a number of ginkgo trees of both sexes on the campus of Ohio Wesleyan University in Delaware, and at this time of year, the ground there is littered with the soft, inedible, slightly wrinkled, pale pinkish fruits that are somewhat larger than Bing cherries. For the most part, modern animals ignore the fruit, although they will consume the seeds within. Wearing gloves, I sometimes have gathered a good handful or two of these intensely odoriferous fruits, the stench of which has been compared to the smell of stale vomit or even dog feces. Personally, I find the smell to be closer to that of an overly ripe, stinky gourmet cheese. And since I am especially fond of some types of such cheese, I am able to tolerate the scent with no problem when I gather some to take home. Now, while the fruits themselves are not edible, the nut inside the hard shell is a gourmet treat, as long as it's cooked properly and only consumed in moderation, no more than 7 or 8 nuts daily, or serious poisoning may result. Asians admire its medicinal qualities even more than the flavor. ginkgo supplements are made from leaves and have been used to improve memory and mental clarity. I need to add an additional word of caution here, besides advising to go easy on consuming the nut. Skin contact with the fruits may cause a temporary dermatitis of varying degrees of severity, depending upon one's sensitivity. So wear gloves if you find and want to collect the fruit. The problem lies in the presence of a chemical very closely related to urushiol, the toxin contained in poison ivy, poison oak, the Japanese lacquer tree, and, yes, cashew lovers, even in the cashew nut. Originally from Brazil, cashew trees were introduced to India in the 1560s by Portuguese colonists. From there, the trees spread to Southeast Asia and finally Africa, where they are now cultivated extensively. The nut we eat is contained within what is called the cashew apple, but the nuts themselves actually are the real fruit, while the apple is a fake fruit. It's simply the fruit's swollen stem, botanically a large pear-shaped drupe. The nut actually grows first, with the apple developing later. When you have a moment, not now, keep listening, look up a picture of the cashew apple on the internet. To me, it looks rather like an elongated, upside-down bell pepper, with the fat cashew nut itself seeming to grow out of the end, which in turn made me think of one of those sci-fi movies in which a grub-like creature is emerging from a bulbous, fleshy pod. Wow. Anyway, the cashew apples themselves are edible fruits with a sweet flavor and firm, juicy texture, and in their native land often are used to make jams, juices, and even alcoholic beverages. But, as far as I know, that outer fruit itself, with its very brief shelf life, is not sold in any grocery stores here in the U.S. In fact, usually it's discarded even before the nuts undergo processing, a highly time-consuming and complicated process in itself, which explains the higher cost of cashews compared to other nuts. The outer shell of that seed contains the allergen urushiol. Generally speaking, nuts that are sold as, quote, raw cashews actually have been processed by steaming or boiling in oil in order to remove the delicious nut from its toxic shell, thereby neutralizing the poison. However, despite all the processing, some people are especially sensitive to the small bit of urushiol remaining and therefore must avoid eating the cashew nuts entirely or suffer an allergic reaction. When writing my segments of In the Green Outdoors, it's not unusual for me to have a thought that sends me off on a tangent, down the Google rabbit hole, as it were, which is what happened this week, as my discussion of ginkgo nuts led me to a more detailed investigation of the delicious and much more common cashew. Researching these programs always expands my knowledge beyond what I expected, and has led me to some really interesting facts. I hope that you too have learned something new and interesting today. And so, until next time, this is Carol Kelly saying, I hope your home is snug and warm, but not too welcoming to the fall invasion of ladybugs, stink bugs, box elder beetles, all of which we wish would remain outside in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.